from Wentworth Institute of Technology in Boston. Welcome to Inside Wentworth.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Inside Wentworth podcast. My name is Greg Avazorius and I am the Associate Director of Communications here at Wentworth. Today we're talking about Wentworth's Center for Community and Learning Partnerships, otherwise known as the CLP. The CLP enables students and faculty to participate in a wide variety of community service activities, sometimes for school credit, but always with the goal of making the surrounding area a better place. The center was initiated in 2005 and has since built a strong relationship with the city of Boston and helped a variety of students achieve success both in their time here in college as well as their post-college careers. So to do that, we are joined today by two members of the CLP, Courtney Wright and Nicole Jensen. If you could just both please introduce yourselves with your title and how long you've been here at Wentworth.
Hi, my name is Courtney Wright. I'm the assistant director of the CLP, and I've been at Wentworth for 5.5 years.
Hi, I'm Nicole Jensen, the assistant director of College Access in the CLP, and I've been here for 3 years.
Great, and thank you both for joining us today.
Sure.
I will also mention that not with us today, but a part of the CLP are Eric Miller, the director, Sandy Pascal, Associate Vice President of Community Relations and External Affairs, Julia Kahn, the Community Engagement Coordinator, and Johanna Sena, Community Relations Liaison. So there are two main reasons that we are talking with you both today. One is we will be featuring the CLP in our next issue of WIT Magazine, which, depending on when you listen to this podcast, is either out right now or is coming up soon. And the second reason is, on a personal level, we really admire what you all do with the CLP. I think that you definitely are a vital part of the student success that we often talk about here at Wentworth. So, pleasure to have you both here. And
thanks.
If you're listening and you don't know the CLP, I think you're in for a treat because Courtney and Nicole are both very interesting people and I'm sure have a lot to say about the CLP. So, my personal thoughts aside, I want to ask you both about what initially drew you to the work that you do. So we can start with you, Courtney. What initially attracted you to either the CLP or Wentworth?
Well, I think it's interesting because I started this job as a result of going to a temp agency when I first moved to Boston. And when I went there, I expressed that I wanted to get involved in an organization that dealt with either public policy or nonprofit activism. And then I was placed with Wentworth as an administrative assistant in the center, not really knowing what it was about. When I got to the center, there was a lot of staffing changes, so I was able to kind of make the role my own. I went out and did a lot of outreach and grassroots kind of meeting with community members, something that I enjoyed doing when I worked on political campaigns before this role. And then kind of assessing the needs on my own, have been able to kind of run programming in line with the center, but also expand it and change it based on the needs of the community. And
sure.
That really interests me, the dynamic aspect of the job.
So you weren't necessarily looking for higher ed. You were more looking for community work, and this was just sort of an extension of everything.
Right, yeah. I wanted to get involved in advocacy and public policy in some way, and I've been able through this job to kind of bring some of that into the position, but also be involved in a lot of things citywide and get exposure to things that I wouldn't had I not been in this role.
Sure. And I imagine, too, that the just level of excitement and engagement among students in general probably really helps with the work that you're trying to do. And I'm sure you get a lot of people that are interested in helping out.
Yeah, I think the energy, it's maybe not overall students. I feel like the things that have driven me the most are the personal or the closer relationships I have with certain students that I work with throughout the 4 years. And service days are always exciting to see people be exposed to a neighborhood or a community partner or even a project that they didn't think that they could be so helpful in, and to watch them succeed is exciting. But to also watch students when they come in as freshmen and then take jobs in the community, do service, and then really make the community their own and do a lot on their own is really rewarding to me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's been awesome to see people take on Mission Hill kind of as their own community and be involved, and then for them to go and recruit other students based on their experience.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
And Nicole, same question. What drew you to Wentworth, or more specifically the CLP?
Yeah, so for me, I've always been interested in education, so really see it as a tool to kind of transform someone's life and change the whole trajectory of their life. And so a lot of people in my family have been teachers, but that was never really a career path I was interested in. So after college, I started working at a small grassroots nonprofit providing individual support for homeless youth and unaccompanied youth. And I really loved that relationship building with individuals and identifying like clear pathways for them, whether it was from high school to career or to two-year or four-year college. And I really was inspired by those students and helping them to find kind of what their passion was in life. And so I had a friend who was actually working at Wentworth in admissions, and I saw the job posting, so kind of went for it. And working here at Wentworth has been really, I've really loved it because I get that individual connection with students. So a lot of the work I do is supporting Boston students who are here on campus, who are enrolled, but then also high school students. So working with students throughout the city when they're, you know, in 10th, 11th grade and starting to think about what they want to do next, and having opportunities to expose them to what the engineering disciplines mean and like what their career path could be and what that could mean for their family. Mm-hmm. Many of the students I work with are, you know, there's a million different words that people use, opportunity sure. youth. That kind of group of students is really exciting to me. This, by going to college and having a successful career, could really change their whole family's lives. So that's been really exciting. And then also working in higher ed, there's much more resources here than there was at a really small grassroots nonprofit. I was running a program myself and didn't really have a lot of support before. So this has been really nice that we can leverage the resources of Wentworth as well as our right. Status around the city to really help move things forward. So I've been involved as well in the last year or so, which really excites me too, is a kind of bigger citywide initiative. So helping kind of move the needle on urban students and their progression through college and making sure that they're not just going to college, but they're graduating, and collaborating with different people around the city, community-based organizations, other higher ed institutes, funders, all of that has been really exciting to, like I said, move the needle on that initiative.
And you're from the Boston area initially. What did you know about this area, the Roxbury area, or schools in the city of Boston in terms of resources or lack of resources?
Yeah. I actually went to school at Emmanuel, so I've been in this neighborhood for years, left to my first job out of college and then came back, which was really nice. So I had some exposure to the different high schools a little bit. I was a sociology major in college, so we did some of the work that we did was kind of, you know, maybe like case studies looking at different nonprofits in the area, and as well as BPS, Boston Public Schools. But I didn't know the depth of the work that went on, and that's been really interesting for me too, is kind of learning the tangled web that is the city of Boston and mm-hmm. how everyone kind of works together.
Sure. Great. So I think that we can say there are three hallmarks essentially of CLP. One is college access, another is community engagement, the third is service learning. And I want to touch on all three of those, but the first one I want to start with is college access. Mm-hmm. And specifically, SAT prep is one program that Wentworth is involved in. Are there numbers or is there an overall success rate that you can speak to in terms of that?
Yeah, so this will be our fourth year offering SAT prep, and we had a couple different community-based initiatives, and now we partner with high schools offering SAT prep to their entire junior class, so a local high school, Edward M. Kennedy Academy for Health Careers. And Boston students are underperforming on SAT to their suburban peers. So, you know, that really impacts students' college options. If their mm-hmm. SAT scores are lower, you know, that's a piece of what colleges look at when students are applying. So trying to kind of raise that caliber within Boston.
Is that common to most cities across America, or is that unique to Boston?
It's definitely an urban issue that happens throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've been able to offer free of cost is an SAT prep program. So with EMK, we've seen some huge strides. Students have over 200 point improvements.
Wow.
You know, that's kind of the max we've seen. But mm-hmm. overall, we've been seeing that as a result of we have students take the exam multiple times and they sit in a test prep class, but then also just having the conversation about what the SAT is and what it means. You know, a 3-hour test can be kind of daunting, but having students really experience what that process is like and what that means for them when they apply to college has been really helpful in seeing improvements within students and mm-hmm. within the school.
That's great. And then dual enrollment is also something CLP offers, which of course allows students in high school to receive college credits. What's that, I guess, not only the success rate, what has that been like, but what kind of feedback have you heard about that program?
Yeah, so dual enrollment, we've been offering that for 6 or 7 years now, and it's grown tremendously over the last couple of years. You know, the first year we offered it, we had 5 students, and now we have 60 students a year participating.
Wow.
Students have the opportunity, like you were saying, in high school to take classes and receive college credit, but more than that, it's a really great opportunity for them to be in a college environment and really learn what that's like. So they're sitting in classes with traditional Wentworth students. They have to, you know, advocate for themselves by seeking out academic resources, by meeting with Joan Giblin or others in the Center for Academic Excellence and meeting with their professor during office hours. So time management, all of those things that you need to learn as a college student,
right,
because you have to work much more independently, and students are able to learn that while they're still in high school. So when they transition to college as a full-time student, feedback we're always hearing is those opportunities really gave them insight into what their next 4 years in college would be like. So the credit is really important, but the exposure to learning some of those softer skills or mm-hmm. life skills is really what we're seeing is instrumental in their success.
Right. And of course, that brings us to RAMP, which we're all very familiar with in this room. RAMP, if you don't know, is a pre-college bridge program, which allows students from City of Boston, mm-hmm. is it other areas?
City of Boston.
City of Boston, to come in and take some classes or get involved in workshops, I should say,
mm-hmm.
and learn some of the concepts that they might not have been exposed to at underfunded schools. We've seen a great success rate with that in terms of students moving from RAMP into Wentworth, and then this past year seeing our first graduates at
mm-hmm.
Wentworth who were a part of the RAMP program.
Yeah.
So maybe both of you could talk to me about that experience and what that's been like for you both to watch these students grow and mature over the years.
I'll just say something quick before I let Nicole explain it further, but the first summer that I started at Wentworth as a temp was the first summer of RAMP, so it's been really... This year, graduation was really kind of emotional for me, just seeing these students that I've seen for all 4 years. And I feel like I keep saying, you know, after this person graduates, so, you know, and I just become more and more attached to the students in RAMP
mm-hmm.
every year because we get a lot of exposure with them and the insight that they give us and the way that they let us into their personal lives and
yeah.
come to us for advice and come to us for just basic life questions has been one of the most inspiring things about this job since I've been here. And seeing RAMP the way that it started with 7 kids, not as much workshop-based programming, and then seeing the way that after Nicole has been hired, the way that the program has expanded and developed now into the model that it currently is and the number of students has been really awesome, and it's great to be a part of.
Yeah, so RAMP, like you were saying, is our pre-college summer bridge program. So it was started, like I was alluding to a little bit before, there's some initiatives citywide. So Success Boston is an initiative that is working to provide support to students from Boston to make sure that they not only attend college but graduate. So this was kind of our effort to help improve those numbers. So we started RAMP 6 years ago, and like Courtney was saying, it was relatively small when we started, and we're now hoping to have about 40 students in the program this year.
That's great.
The last 2 years has been 27. Hoping to break that 30, but hopefully 40 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And like you were saying as well, students are in different workshops, so they get to know the campus. They build really close relationships with faculty and staff on campus, which is really instrumental. When they start here, they, you know, they know who to go to if they're having issues aside from the CLP.
Speaks to some of those life skills that you were talking
exactly.
about before.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's huge. They're working on projects with real partners, so some of the relationships that Courtney has built throughout the community, we have students working on real life projects. So getting to that exposure to what it's like to work with a real client, which is something that they'll do here, you know, the 4 years that they're here on campus is
mm-hmm.
it's project based. So really diving into what that environment will be like early on. And then we also do a lot of site visits to industry partners. So networking is a really huge skill when they have to go out to get a co-op.
Definitely,
we want to make
yeah.
sure they have those opportunities. So students have gone to companies like EMC, TripAdvisor, Turner Construction, you know, some of the big players in the city and building relationships. And we've seen that as a result of going on those site visits, students have gotten co-ops, which is really cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also pay them. So for many students, to not have a paying summer job is just not feasible. Most of the students that we're working with are from low-income backgrounds. So to not be working in the summer, whether to help their family or to pay for college, is just would be really difficult. So we feel really strongly about paying students for the time they spend with us is really important. So we're able to pay them. It's a summer job that they're participating
sure.
in. And we've seen some really great success. You know, our first graduating class graduated this past year. So we're seeing that. So two cohorts have graduated. So 60% of students have graduated in 4 years. And that's beating the six-year graduation rate of BPS by about 7%. So we're seeing that providing that support early on during that transition period between high school and higher ed is really important. But then we also, after they end RAMP, we work with them pretty consistently, but then also connect them to a lot of organizations around the city that provide one-on-one coaching and mentoring. And then we see that naturally those students get really involved in our office through some of the programs Courtney will talk a little bit about, but ASB and Co-Build and Community Work Study, they're a huge piece of those programs because they get really invested in the work that we do and,
mm-hmm.
and see the value in doing so. And that's been really exciting too. And that's how we've been able to build some of those really great relationships with students throughout their time here.
That's great. And I imagine there's sort of a snowball effect, right? So not only is the RAMP program itself really important, but also that stipend that you were talking about, because I could see maybe a family saying, well, I don't know, or a student maybe saying, I don't know if I can go to college because I don't feel like I'm up to speed.
Exactly.
This is where RAMP comes in. But then beyond that, the parents might say, well, I don't know if you can do RAMP because you should have a summer job
yeah.
to pay for your books and to pay for everything else. That's where that stipend really comes into play.
Absolutely.
And it's something a lot of other schools don't offer, is that right?
No, there are a lot of bridge programs that exist around the state and the city, and some you have to pay for, and some you opt in and it's just an optional program, but they're not necessarily paying, and that stipend is really important. And another mm-hmm. thing too is that, you know, many of these students are coming from BPS, Boston Public Schools, where it's minority majority. You know, many of the students, the majority of the school looks like they do, students of color, and then they come here to Wentworth and it's a predominantly white campus. So for them to be able to build a cohort of students who've been from similar backgrounds is really important so that they don't feel so isolated when they're here on campus
right.
and they feel like they have people who understand, you know, some of their challenges maybe they've been to or understand their background, which has been really instrumental in seeing their success as well.
Sure.
Yeah, one thing just to add about the cohorts that they form is that I think that's one of the most exciting things every year about RAMP is we watch the students come in at the beginning of the summer and everyone's super quiet, not really talking. We're like, how this group is never going to click.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yeah.
by the fall, you see them on campus everywhere. That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
Like, people you'd never peg as being like best friends or,
yep.
sure.
you know, also that relationship that they build in the summer is, and they'll bring other students into the CLP and they, it's awesome to see.
Yeah. Upperclassmen as well will work in the summer as kind of mentors. And that's been really nice as well. You know, Courtney and I and Eric and Julia can provide advice to students, but hearing it from one of their peers, I think is the best way for it to kind of resonate with them. So to have a
mm-hmm.
junior who's all, you know, similar major as an incoming freshman to talk with them about their experience, you know, physics is going to be really challenging for you. You just got to push through and
yeah.
like, you'll be okay. And to just kind of talk about their experience here, I think that is a huge value that we've seen as well as by hiring students who come back. And I always have, you know, the last day of RAMP, I had maybe like 10 kids come up to me and say, can I work next summer? I'm like, it's not remotely on my mind yet, but
right.
consider yourself hired.
That's great. Yeah. And I've seen too, you were talking about this idea of students kind of coming out of their shells a little bit. I've seen RAMP students join organizations and become a part of the leadership groups in those
yeah.
organizations too, which I imagine is really nice for you to both see.
Yeah. We have a lot of students who are really involved in SHIP and NSBE and held leadership positions or become RAs, and that's really exciting to see their development over a couple of years. And a lot of those students, again, will kind of mentor younger students and get them to understand the value in doing things like that and the opportunities that that can provide for them, the doors that can
right.
open for them.
So the next thing that I want to talk about is alternative spring break. And I know that this is something that you've been involved in for a couple of years now, Courtney. The program goes to several different cities, typically three, per spring break, and just like a lot of other schools, it offers an alternative to sitting on the beach and taking a typical vacation during that time. You're doing something to give back, you're working at a food pantry or a soup kitchen or anywhere else. And so I thought we could talk a little about that. Maybe you could give just a general overview of some of the cities that program has participated in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alternative Spring Break has gone to a lot of different places since I've been here. So New Orleans, Homestead, Florida, Washington, D.C., rural Kentucky, San Francisco, San Diego, and then we always do a local trip in Boston. We've also gone to Houston a couple of times. And those are the places since I've been here that we've gone to visit.
Great. And what's the type of place you typically go to there? Is there a specific type of center or cause that you look for?
So what we've been trying to do every year is to try to make our trips a little more themed-based to help with fundraising and to help with things like that. But what we've found is that, and I should know this coming from a city, but when you go, we've had to go to a lot of urban places lately, and the one challenge there is that there already are so many nonprofits working in these areas. So to find places that need help, which a lot of places do, and that sounds weird, but I think people underestimate the work that goes into hosting volunteers for organizations.
Sure.
So, you know, there's 14 students and one faculty or staff chaperone. So to ask someone to accommodate 15 people for a day, yeah, it's helpful, but it also, you know, it's a little cumbersome on the organization, especially when they're trying to run their business while you're there. So we found a lot of food banks and different types of food security organizations we've worked with. One of my favorites last year in Washington, D.C., we worked with Food and Friends. They started in the late 1980s when the AIDS epidemic was big, and they started off in the basement of a church providing food to members or people in the community that were terminally ill. And then that expanded into people that were terminally ill with different cancers, and then, you know, diabetic restrictions and all kinds of terminal diseases. And then the organization found that the person in the family getting all of the food would feel compelled to share with their family. So now the organization delivers food to the whole family. And so we got to go with a group of students and package all of the food that was delivered. And they had a chef on site, but the care that went in to the food, I mean, the guys were awesome, energetic, and so fun. But I mean, they had food plans for every possible restriction you could imagine, you know, diabetics, vegan, you know, different restrictions based on different dietary or stomach diseases, foods like that. It was just really, really incredible. And they deliver, I forget the mile radius, but all the way into Virginia, Maryland, D.C. And that was really incredible. And the food bank in Houston was another one where we've gone back there a few years, and the students love the staff there. The staff I found at food banks, which you may not expect, they treat the students like they work there, and they're really full of personality, and they make them feel really useful, and they let them interact with the people that come to the food bank for resources. So I know with the students in Houston, it's the largest food bank in the U.S., and it predominantly serves more children in the U.S. than anywhere in the U.S., so the students were really touched by that, and being able to serve meals to families, I think, was a really big deal.
I would imagine, too, that a student seeking this type of program out is not a student who's being forced into community service. I mean, this is something they actively want to participate in. So they're not just going to stand around. They probably want to be useful and help out.
One thing I found with the students is I think a big part, I mean, it's because due to some internal or Wentworth restrictions on things like vans, and we've had to kind of shift our focus into more urban areas so that there is transportation. So in some of the places like San Diego and San Francisco, my concern was that we would get students that just wanted to go to those places, and the service was kind of secondary. So I always get a mix at the beginning of the year. There's some students that have always done service, some that are new to it and want to get involved, and then others who come because their friends brought them. But chaperoning and running Reflections every year, my favorite thing is to see the students how either they didn't realize different situations or weren't as up to date on social issues, but how involved they get and how, you know, I'll have students that admit at Reflections, you know, I came here not really knowing, never really got involved, and now I can't imagine going back to campus and not being involved. I love the students that are naturally inclined to service, but it's almost even more rewarding to see the students who aren't after the fact.
Yeah. You mentioned trying to theme some of these trips, and I know you mentioned New Orleans, which may or may not have been related to Hurricane Katrina, I suppose. Houston, you might go back to because of the flooding that took place last year. Do you try to look to current events like that and figure out which cities might need even more help than usual?
Well, the way we do it is usually we hire two student coordinators that plan each trip, and we let them pick the place. What we've been trying to do the last few years is to go to a site twice. So we went to D.C. for the first time last year, but are going back again this year. Houston was that way. We went once and went back because we want to create some lasting partnerships with sites and for students to get involved, you know, long term with these organizations. So I think the students initially try to find things based on, I know in Houston, the one thing that sold them was getting to work with the Galveston Horse Historical Society and to work with architects from their historical district there. So one of the coordinators was in architecture, so being able to do things to their major brought them there. Florida, we've gone to Florida 3 or 4 times, and I know the students say there they like to do, there we do more like removal of invasive species and animal plant type environmental work, and a lot of the students express that they want to do that because it's not as, they're not exposed to that in their day-to-day, you know, and they're working in classes, so they want to be outside. And
you're always looking to engage them as much as possible. Yeah.
So I think we'll go to a site, and if the students really connect with something, then that kind of spreads because the coordinators for the following year will be students that had been on a trip. But we've kind of gotten away from doing it like crisis-based, you know, picking places because, like I said, everything floods into those sites when there is. So we've been trying to find the more kind of needle in the haystack type opportunities.
You kind of touched on this already in terms of long-term goals, but you know, I'm often struck around the holidays thinking about how a lot of places find volunteers because it's something you're thinking about during that time. Students are obviously thinking about this type of thing during spring break period. Is it a challenge to get them to think that way or to want to volunteer their time the rest of the year?
Yeah, I would say generally in some cases it's not. In some cases I'll have students that, I think alternative spring break, the way that it is they're in another place and they're going to a site for a whole day and they get really invested in one project. So the students, when they see an opportunity to do something in co-build or like a bigger project, they'll be interested in that and come by the office. But I think one thing that I would love to find a better way to get across, I think some students think they have to be out of where they live to give back or to have, you know, those resources. And I don't think that they connect the needs as locally. Okay. You know, a lot of them will have lofty, like, world goals of solving all of these things, and then I think when they're back in the, you know, the routine of their schedule and things like that, I think that without it being so structured, they kind of lose sight sometimes of how to give back locally.
Right.
And that's a small percentage. We have other ones that they lead our, you know, service days.
And I think that's probably, you can tell me if I'm wrong, that's probably one of the goals of CLP in general, right? Is think about world goals, but also think about the local level and what can we do right here to impact people.
Right. And I think students, once they get involved locally in this neighborhood, then they stay involved. Like, I don't have volunteers that do it one time and leave because I think they realize that, wow, 3 hours of your day is actually makes a huge difference. And that's one of the benefits of being in Mission Hill is the community are all activists too. And they speak to the students. They give them the history of Mission Hill. They constantly talk to them about the relevance of the work that they're doing.
Right.
And I think that really makes them feel more invested.
So in terms of the types of students that participate in Alternative Spring Break, what are we talking about in terms of demographics?
We actually have done some research on this recently and have found since 2011, 240 students have participated in Alternative Spring Break. 48% have been male, 51% female, and 21.3% have been Boston residents.
Okay.
So it's a very equalizing program, I think, compared to the school is 79.6% male as of the fall 2016 census. So a program that is more equally engaged by women and also the Boston students or Boston residents are 3% of the campus population. So to see 21% of them participating in ASB, I feel like it's a great little micro, you know, I don't know, program or advantage or opportunity for students to get engaged in a more diverse way than they see day to day on campus, you know.
Not too dissimilar from RAMP, I suppose.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Great. I want to keep moving and talk about CoBuild, which we also touched on. So CoBuild is the community building project, and For our listeners, just a quick overview of some of the recent work that you've done. You have altered the landscaping and seating at the Thomas Menino YMCA in Hyde Park, designed and implemented new interior furniture at the Huntington Ave YMCA. There is Little Fenway, which is a kind of replica Fenway Park up in Vermont. And there's also the Tobin Community Center, which I know students have helped contribute the garden toward. So those are just a few. I know there are other projects. What's the main goal of CoBuild?
The main goal of CoBuild is for students to see, one is to see the value in the trades and the majors that they're studying in a real world context, and to hope that they'll see that they can make a difference in communities that they might not. I don't know, I think the good thing about CoBuild as a student, you can be a sophomore or a freshman and go work with a professor and a community member, you know, with a table saw and build a garden where maybe they're not getting to do that in class yet. It gets,
right.
Students are able to do hands-on what they're learning theoretically in class, and I think be invested in projects. So our overall goal is to leverage the skills that our students have with the needs of the community as they define them
sure.
to us, and letting students and the community work together in a client kind of relationship in order to solve those problems. So it gives students, I don't know, some sense of autonomy on the work that they're doing, and it also leaves space for faculty members to get involved and community members to learn and be exposed to some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, when I go to a meeting or something and we built a handicap deck and access ramp on the back of the Missional Health Movement, and it's when you say that in the community, it totally shifts their idea of what Wentworth students are capable of
right.
in the neighborhood. You know, so they might think, like, the typical things of picking up trash and raking leaves, but then when they see students building, you know, and designing things that they would never maybe be able to afford or would need staff to write grants that they don't have.
More permanent structures.
Yeah, it really opens up the community's view of what Wentworth students can do and how they can better leverage institutions in their own neighborhood to help them access resources that otherwise they might not be able to.
Sure. And Nicole, have you seen, I know that RAMP students, particularly this past summer, were mm-hmm. working, I think, on one of the YMCA buildings in terms of design work, right?
Yes.
And so they're also involved right from the get-go in being involved in the city of Boston, mm-hmm. looking at these real-world projects.
Yeah, and so we kind of use RAMP as a testing ground for some of these partnerships and projects. So 2 years ago, we worked with the YMCA, the Menino YMCA, and students were initially thinking about what the front space could look like. And so they kind of sparked that relationship with the YMCA, put together some initial designs, and then that ultimately became a senior design class with Rob Trembore. In architecture. So we see RAMP as a way to, again, test the partnership and start some initial ideas and then move that forward. So we worked with the YMCA in Dorchester this past summer, thinking about redesigning their teen space, and the hope is that that will kind of move forward and potentially be integrated in a class somewhere.
So I guess kind of branching off of that, if we're talking about service learning, you know, some of that goes in hand in hand with the community projects, but we're also talking about co-ops that students are involved with, in addition to some certificate programs. So do you want to just touch on that really quickly for the listeners?
Sure, yeah. I think one overarching thing with all of these programs, and Nicole just touched on it, is the emphasis that we put on partnerships. And we like to find partnerships that are engaged multiple ways. So she's a great example. The Menino Y started as a RAMP mm-hmm. project and then a senior design course. And then now we have three hired co-ops working in our office that are now working on the backyard redesign. So we like to find partnerships and relationships where we can engage kind of all of our programming and, you know, in all different ways. The same with, you mentioned Travis Roy and Little Fenway. That's a professor who's been working with students, and that has been a huge source of pride, I think, for the civil engineering department specifically, but also the Travis Roy Foundation in general, and Pat, who owns Little Fenway, him coming down to speak at, you know, Jerry did a presentation a few nights ago on his service learning projects, and mm-hmm. the community members buying in and also doing their part and coming in and being present and being able to explain things is the kind of reciprocity that we look for in our partnerships and relationships. So
yeah.
With service learning, the CLP's kind of function is kind of helping to identify some of these partners with you know, faculty members, you know, Monica, I know, is working, has a concrete class in the spring. And knowing that, if I'm out in the neighborhood and hear of someone that might want some concrete work, figuring out if there's a way that she can incorporate that into class. Same, I mentioned with Jerry, different classes like that, and finding professors. And it's not always, like you mentioned, for credit or curricular, but, you know, faculty members that will lead a club to do something. And it just gives, I think, faculty a way to give students that real life exposure that they want, and but also kind of a test ground for somewhere that's not expecting the most high-end product. You know, like Nate Durbinsky's computer networking students, they built a database for Castle Square Tenants Organization, and it was a huge deal to Castle Square. And for the students, it was an exercise, and for Nate, you know, it was a few extra hours facilitating the relationship along with me, but at the end of the day, what they delivered was so far beyond the partner's expectations. And I think students being able to see those, I think it adds an extra layer of education to their classes that they're taking.
Sure.
That I think a lot of them might come out of a college unlike Wentworth without co-ops and without the exposure of the service learning that we can offer, kind of a maturity and a professionalism that they might not have otherwise.
Right. We mentioned Travis Roy. So Travis Roy, for those who don't know, was a rising hockey star at Boston University back in the 1990s. Was involved in a tragic accident on the ice that left him paralyzed. And so he has since created the Travis Roy Foundation, which is devoted to researching spinal cord injuries. Tell me how you got involved with him initially. Did he find you? Did you find him?
So Eric, our director, his best friend growing up, Garrett, is in a wheelchair. He's quadriplegic. He's also blind as a result of a car accident that he was in as a young kid, and his dad is a pilot of a small, I think Cessna, I'm not even sure the type of plane, but Garrett and his dad went around state to state capital trying to raise awareness for stem cell research and spinal cord funding. And so Garrett has been involved with the Travis Roy Foundation because raising awareness for spinal cord, things like that. So Garrett actually came in one of our summers with RAMP, and one of the projects was helping him create a system on his wheelchair that helped him access his backpack because he was a student at University of Lowell, Massachusetts Lowell. He's since graduated. But so then he introduced us to Travis through that relationship, and we met with Garrett and Travis and then Spalding Rehabilitation Center. And a lot of this stemmed from the deck that we did at the Missional Health Movement, realizing that if the Travis Roy Foundation had, they received so many requests for donations and things to be done, and a lot of what they do is refit houses, build decks and things like that. And we just realized, you know, we've already done this. We have students and staff that are involved in this. Is there a way that if there are things that you can't fund within the, you know, area of the school that we could help, you know, a project for students? And then through that, the Travis Roy Foundation reached out to Pat, who owns Little Fenway up in Vermont. And he's obviously really close with Travis Roy. So they do a wiffle ball tournament every summer. And he, up at their property in Vermont in Essex, they have a Little Fenway, a Little Wrigley, and a Little Field of Dreams. And so he built this kind of as a pet project and then created this whole arena for these wiffle ball tournaments that raise money every summer for the Travis Roy Foundation and for stem cell research and spinal cord research. So Travis talked to Pat and was like, you know, we have this relationship with Wentworth, and he's had a lot of gradient issues and things with the field. So he connected Pat to us, and we brought in Jerry Hopcroft. And then there were some issues with the field's flooding, and then they wanted a stand built that made it so that people in wheelchairs could see all three of the fields from one lookout point. And then Jerry went up there with students. They surveyed the land. Pat has come down a bunch. And then one semester, Vitaly Sakin, his civil engineering class, designed and built the lookout deck. And then in July, after that, Eric and I and seven students and Jerry went up there and dug irrigation into the fields so that the fields no longer flood when it rains. And then Jerry's been helping look for a way to level where the parking is. And now, as of a few weeks ago, I found out this semester they're building another seating area with another pavilion.
And they're asking for Wentworth help again.
Yes, and Wentworth students are designing it, and Pat works on getting materials donated and all these things. And if you ever go to Little Fenway, it's hard to explain, but it's pretty incredible. The guy Pat picked a piece off of the Green Monster in Fenway to match his little Fenway.
No kidding.
Wow. He had a guy donate the Citgo sign that looks just like the one in the city.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, they have, I mean, thousands of people go up there every summer, and all of the money goes for that fund. And then I think the next project in the pipeline is building a trophy room that they also have Jerry
interesting
working on. So it's just that relationship. It's been in a class. It's been volunteer. It's been started in RAMP.
Mm-hmm. Which is the Wentworth model, that experiential, hands-on model that we always talk about.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's fantastic. And thank you for the transition to Little Fenway. So I didn't have to do it. We've definitely seen, in recent years especially, a lot of local politicians, other city dignitaries, speak their minds about Wentworth and CLP and just sing your praises, talk about the fact that you're a really great neighbor. We've seen everybody from Tito Jackson and Josh Zakim to Michelle Wu, Mayor Marty Walsh, just to name a few people, mm-hmm. and I know that goes back to Mayor Menino as well, mm-hmm. Does that type of endorsement legitimize the work that you guys do?
I think not only does it legitimize it, but I think it makes a lot of the things that Wentworth look to do in the future possible. I think a big disconnect between maybe COP and community relations in general in a higher ed setting is the more external role that we play in terms of, you know, if we want a new building built or if we need something, some kind of buy-in from the city, they're going to look at the way the community views us and what types of goodwill that we have mm-hmm. there. And, you know, one end of all the programming that we do is to engage this community and to be a contributing member of this community, and that fares well with politicians. We're also really lucky with a lot of our politicians, you know, Josh Zakim, Tito, Marty, who come, you know, to Mission Main Family Fund Day and roll up their sleeves, and mm-hmm. their liaison, community liaisons help us, you know, from the mayor's liaison helping us block off streets to do the Frawley Dell Garden, or, you know, Josh Zakim helping push money in the Tobin to do more work. I think they found that when the neighborhood is, especially this one, it's so activist, is more pleased, they fare better. So mm-hmm. they realize that our programming helps to alleviate some issues, or at least makes us a resource to the community where a lot of other institutions aren't as outward facing and aren't as inclusive
sure.
mm-hmm. to neighbors. So
well, and I've witnessed that firsthand, where politicians have come here for different events and said things along the lines of, some schools just like to take, and Wentworth is a school that likes to work with us, that you're always involved in things from the ground up with the city, trying to get the right approvals, get mm-hmm. buy-in from community residents and so forth, and then continuing to work with the city even after a project is completed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I couldn't speak for the politicians, so I don't know if this is actually what they feel, but I think that they recognize, much like we do, that relationships are essential to moving anything forward or to doing anything that makes an impact. And I think that they know if we have a good relationship with these community members, especially those that are more skeptical of institutions, that it had results from a lot of work, a lot of engagement, and a lot of just face time. So when a politician, and I think they need those same kind of relationships to get reelected and to do the work that they do. So I think mm-hmm. us, our office, Wentworth, and those politicians kind of understand the dynamics of relationships and, you know, town gown relationship. So when they mm-hmm. see a community that is appreciative of an institution, I think they know what kind of work went into that and that they're respectful of that.
Yeah. And from a college access standpoint as well, as you know, when we go to these different convenings about college access around the city, it's mostly at the table, it's mostly public institutions. So 2- and 4-year public institutions, many of that, you know, local and state funding is allocated to those universities, and Wentworth is kind of one of the leaders among private institutions who are doing this work. And it's not just a matter of, you know, throwing money at students and trying to get them to come here, but it's really supporting them along the way. So I think the CLP is really unique in having built-in supports here on campus for those students, and, you know, really connecting them to different departments. So, you know, like diversity office and different other organizations around campus, really providing kind of that holistic approach to students mm-hmm. is really unique. And I think that, you know, we always have Tito Jackson comes during the summer and talks with RAMP students about his journey, and Rob Sanchez has come as well. It's just like they really see the value in the programs that we're doing as a higher ed institution, but especially as a private institution, is really allocating time and funds to these initiatives.
Just to add on the Tito Jackson, I think a lot of institutionally, a lot of people might not understand the importance of some programming or see how it ties in to higher ed. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the programming, like the Mission Hill Summer Program, Tito Jackson came 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. The head of Health and Human Services for Boston, Felix Arroyo, came last year, 2 years ago also. Mm-hmm. And so those politicians coming and visiting those programs and seeing that Wentworth is providing a space for these programs to exist in the community where they would not be able to otherwise, I think gives us a lot of credibility.
Yeah.
You know, and especially like Tito and Felix, who went through those same programs.
Yeah, definitely.
It mm-hmm. kind of keeps them connected to the city. And
yeah.
I think it's fair to say, and we talk about this in the magazine article too, that many years ago, Wentworth's relationship in terms of being a neighbor to Boston was not stellar. We can put it that way. And I think that over time, especially within the time period that President Pontius has been here, that the CLP was initiated, I think there has been a lot more work done, more outreach, certainly. Do you feel comfortable at this point saying that Wentworth is a part of the Boston makeup and an actual piece of the community?
I do. I think a big piece of, and Courtney talked a little bit about this before, is our partnerships are really long-standing and multifaceted. So we're not just going out and doing something to make ourselves look good for that one, you know, particular event or something. We're really trying to build these long-standing relationships and serving them in multiple ways for as long as possible. And I think that, you know, it takes a long time to build trust with people, especially in neighborhoods like Mission Hill. And throughout the city, they may be a little bit skeptical of the work that we're doing and maybe view it as we're just trying to, as an institution, make ourselves look great, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think we've been building these relationships for years and built that trust. And so now we're really viewed as kind of a key player, as someone who's really here to provide services for an array of individuals in the community.
Yeah, I feel with that, too. Even though we all know and the community knows that a good deal of things we do are for, you know, goodwill and are for the more political purposes, I think one difference in our office is that the neighbors feel cared about. And I think our personal attempts to FaceTime and visit people and stay engaged beyond projects just goes an extra step further than a lot of institutions. And, mm-hmm. you know, we don't just call Mission Main when we want to build a building. We're there multiple times a year and stopping by to visit the task force whenever I get the chance. You know, I think mm-hmm. they feel that we're invested personally, and I think that that goes a long way.
Right.
I think that in the time that the three of us have been here anyway, we have had one administration in the White House. Without getting political or taking a side in any way,
right.
Do you see your work at all shifting with the new administration now in place? Are there things that you're going to have to maybe start doing differently or ways that you apply to things, anything like that?
I think one thing for me is kind of mentors to the students that come through our office. One thing to just be aware of is empowering students more than ever, I think, to advocate mm-hmm. not only for themselves academically, and that's mm-hmm. one thing in RAMP, but to encourage them to advocate for themselves as citizens, and that their, you know, special circumstances or things like that, to know that there are people that support them. And mm-hmm. I think one thing I worry about, which I've seen even before the administration changed, public funding in a lot of, you know, Action Boston community development, social service agencies, those things have been plummeting while needs have raised, you know. And I think it's going to be challenging because nonprofits and the organizations we work with and people like us fill a lot of gaps that the government doesn't in all types of ways. So I think the prospect that funding and those kinds of programming could go down is troublesome, and I think it'll just, we'll have to readjust like always, and our role might increase in terms of looking for the type of organizations we try to support or how we try to support them and who we get involved mm-hmm. to help. I think our relationships with city officials will be more robust, and we're going to need, it's going to take a lot of people and a lot of partnerships to keep things.
Well, and it sounds
forward.
Like in addition to direct work that you do with groups and organizations, that you're also maybe talking about philosophical changes in people's minds, just mm-hmm. getting them to think more about donating their time or thinking about causes that need extra help.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think just even the act of asking for help is more important than ever now. Advocating for yourself isn't a sign of weakness, or that advocating yourself isn't...
It's okay to ask for help.
Yeah,
yeah.
Paul Burton and Ron Jean, both Wentworth alumni, both mm-hmm. also two men that were really involved with CLP and continue to be so, started a book scholarship, or at least it, I think, began that way, mm-hmm. as a way to offer minority students extra money for things like books and other expenses around campus. But it's evolved a bit, right? There's now, I think, mentorship involved, and obviously Paul and Ron both come back to campus a lot for different programs. Speak, if you can, maybe about what it's like to see two students that came from backgrounds where there wasn't a lot of opportunity, found Wentworth, or maybe Wentworth found them, and they were able to go through this institute, achieve career success, and are now at a point where they can pay it all forward. What does that feel like to you personally?
I think one thing about the scholarship that really stood out to me is just seeing students come through, and the needs that they have are so, not simple, but they're so much more practical than I think donors or financial aid and the government, people like that, consider. You know, having students that can't eat, you know, that they have a free tuition, but they can't afford the dining hall and yeah. books. So it really stood out to me that their scholarship was actually something so practical, you know, something that actually will resonate with students and is something that they need. You know, I think a lot of those people think getting to college is it, and once you're there, you know, it's fine, but there's so many other things that go into account, and housing, and to see someone actually come to the table and offer something so necessary and something yeah. so overlooked was really, it was inspiring for me, and I hope that it gains momentum and more people realize those types of things that students need support with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what Courtney's kind of alluding to is like what's really overlooked in a lot of students is we've seen in the last couple of years, even a couple students who they're junior, senior, they're doing really well academically, but they have these challenges that are really unique to, you know, maybe urban students or first generation college students or low income students, that they can't afford their textbooks, or they have a gap of $1,000, which, you know, they may come from a background that they don't have someone who can co-sign for them. Mm-hmm. It's just not it's just not an option for them. So by Ron and Paul developing this book scholarship, it's been really huge to fill some of those small gaps, like Courtney was saying, that maybe a lot of people overlook, is not that they assume is maybe not a huge barrier, but for some students that could mean that maybe they're not able to take classes for that semester if they don't have that $500 to purchase their books, and they're trying to piecemeal, and then they end up falling behind in their classes and failing for the semester. You know, that's a huge barrier, and they've been really amazing in terms of supporting other students and mentoring students as they come back every year during ramp and talk with students about their personal experience, mm-hmm. which those personal stories are kind of what speaks best to students in this current situation. And every year as well, we host what's called the Boston Scholars Dinner in the fall. So we invite prospective students from Boston, community partners, alumni, current students, and have a really in-depth conversation about some of the things that aren't really talked about. So, you know, it's important mm-hmm. to talk about the admissions process, but what are challenges that urban students face in going to college? And, you know, this is one of those issues. And
right.
They've been really great about coming to that dinner every year and, again, talking to a larger audience about what their experience was like, and sitting on a panel or just getting up and speaking or talking with students one-on-one about kind of their career path and what they've been through.
If you're both respectively looking ahead, projects that are coming up or maybe goals you have in mind, what are a couple things that you want to mention that you're really looking forward to in the new year?
So one thing I'm really looking forward to, and we started last year or 2 years ago, we kind of experimenting with having high school students in the RAMP program. Last year as well, we honed in that focus a little bit, and we're looking to have girls in high school, so rising juniors and seniors in high school who are interested in STEM. And we had 6 students the last 2 years, looking to have about 15 this year. But, you know, that's a need that we hear from the community all the time. And I think that's what we're really good about, is listening to our partners and hearing what they say. And we'll be having those students in the same RAMP program, so paying them as well, giving them the opportunity to participate in the workshops and the projects, but breaking them out a little bit during the day. And this is a really good opportunity for high school students specifically girls who are underrepresented in STEM majors and careers, mm-hmm. to have exposure to all of the different engineering disciplines. So last year we had some really great faculty members who spent some time with them every week working in the different labs and really getting them to understand, you know, you're great at math and science, you don't just have to be a doctor. Here's opportunities right. to make an impact in the world through civil engineering or being a biomedical engineer. And so that is something I'm really looking forward to, is to continue to grow that program and to see that this exposure for the 6 weeks during the summer can ultimately change some individuals' lives and really see that they can, you know, just because they're a woman of color, that they still have the same opportunities and can pursue a career in something related, and then, you know, very long term, giving back and mm-hmm. Fostering that interest in other women and youth.
Right.
Yeah, for me, I think we have a lot of projects coming up. I mentioned we have three co-ops working right now, and they're working on three different projects simultaneously. But one that I'm really excited to see come to fruition is with the St. Stephen's after-school program, youth programs. They do it all. And it's based at St. August and St. Martin in the Episcopal Church on Lenox Street, right off Melnia Cass. Okay. So we had a member of the community, used to be the head of the Mission Hill Youth Collaborative, and then went to work for St. Stephen's, connected us with their youth director, Sarah O'Connor. And she's worked with this group of teens advocating for the park over on Melnia Cass. Mm-hmm. They were the ones, there's been things in the news about the mayor dedicating $3 million, or I forget the amount, to revitalize that park. There's a lot of drug use, a lot of homeless activity, different things like that. So the youth themselves put together a campaign to the city to get that funding, and they've also been instrumental in getting trees removed, things like that, to kind of limit hiding spaces for people, or, you know, privacy for people to go do mm-hmm. Bad things because it's right next to their playground.
Sure.
And they used to have a community garden that was kind of bulldozed by a development. I think there's no clear ownership of the space, so they've been looking to recreate a community garden in front of this church, has a grassy area. So last year, Alternative Spring Break in Boston went and met with the youth to find out what they wanted the space to look like and help them design it. And then as we were there, we realized the teen space in the church needs a lot of work, so the teens also helped kind of paint a picture of what they would like.
Mm-hmm.
So we've received some grant, a $5,000 grant from TD Bank, and we're hoping to leverage that for more funding. So to get to see the co-op students work with the youth to create this, I think, is really exciting. And then also, Here House is a project we've been working on a lot this year. It's at 40 Calumet Street in Mission Hill. It houses six low-income senior citizens. And so it's run by Mission Hill Neighborhood Housing Services.
And how do you spell that, Courtney?
Here House?
Yeah.
H-E-R-E.
Okay.
And so Mission Hill Neighborhood Housing Services maintains a lot of property in and around Mission Hill, and a lot of it needs, you know, pretty basic work. I mean, Here House, we painted three floors, and then Nicole and Ramp had a group that designed an outdoor garden space for them, mm-hmm. which we're working on. The Frawley Dell Garden we did with 25 staff and faculty was a property of theirs. So the potential of that relationship, we've been working to create kind of a pipeline of projects to do over the next few years, just kind of on their properties in Mission Hill, where our students can, that's, you know, do cement work or build a garden and paint and, you know, do all these different types of things. And because of that, the Honors Society on campus, or the Honors Fraternity,
mm-hmm.
Danielle Candido did ASB and Community Work Study and all those things, and they have come to us to ask if their fundraising efforts can go towards co-build to help fund some of these projects, like materials, and they've also been very involved in coming to show up to projects as volunteers. So that's been a really great relationship that I'm excited to see expand.
Yeah, it sounds like some really great work coming up. So I think we're about out of time, but I want to mention that if you would like to learn more about the CLP, you can visit wit.edu/CLP. And where can people find you on social media?
So we are on Twitter and Instagram, and they're both at CLP Wentworth. Another maybe thing to point out is we are across the street at 553 Huntington, so a lot of students have trouble finding our physical location. So
that is located just to the left of the new 525 apartments.
Yes, exactly. And to the right of the doorway to 555.
Yes, perfect. Well, thank you again, Courtney and Nicole, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for talking about CLP.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.